financial planning and security can sometimes be seen as a moving target. The rules change constantly, and you need guidance to stay ahead of the market moves. This is the Labenthal Report with Michael Hartzman and Dominic Tavella, with additional insight from industry veteran Jordan Kimmel. We'll break down the news, trends, and overall direction of the markets, telling you what may be coming next, investment opportunities, and what to avoid. Now, here are your hosts, Dominic Tavella and Michael Hartzman.
Good evening, everyone. This is Michael Hartzman, broadcasting from Long Island, New York. Today is February 2nd, 2021. I'm here with my partner, Dominic Tavella, who's also broadcasting from Long Island. Good evening, Dominic. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mike. Survived this crazy snowstorm that came pretty much out of nowhere, and we're all back at work trying to do the best job we can.
Well, I'm back at work, but I'm still working from home today. So the background's a little different today because I'm in my home office. But yeah, we got 19 inches of snow here on Long Island. So that made up for not getting any snow last year.
In one fell swoop.
Yes.
So Mike, I gotta kind of hand it off to you immediately. You know, last week you closed the show. I believe your comment was, and the market will give us something to talk about. And man, what a week we had in the market. So kudos to you for calling that one, but I didn't expect the volatility and craziness that we got.
Well, thanks for the compliment. I'm not 100% sure what you're referring to. What happened in the market last week?
so we're gonna play a little short clip in a bit, but we went from a market that was just kind of moving along very nicely and very seemed like even with all the political upheaval that we've been through, that we were up, I think, somewhere around 2.8% on the S&P year to date, and it looked like things were going to be kind of quiet. And we've been telling clients for a while to expect some volatility, but frankly, you know, we weren't really seeing anything on the horizon. And we closed the week with the S&P minus for the year about 1%, plus or minus about 1%. So volatility came back and came back with a vengeance.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about on the last few shows headline risk. And if last week was never an example of headline risk, I don't know what is. I was reading a story over the weekend on Yahoo Finance. And you know, obviously, we're both referring to the activity in GameStop. And the article in Yahoo Finance said, when you have a story that involves Elon Musk, AOC, the U.S. congressman from the Bronx, congresswoman from the Bronx, the owner of the New York Mets, and the app Reddit, you have arrest and something called Wall Street Bets, you have a recipe for quite a story. And that's what unfolded last week, kind of, as you said, the clear blue sky.
Look, we talk to clients all the time about volatility and how we try to prepare for it and if at all possible, anticipate it. But this one, to me, I mean, I guess you could kind of see it coming. The markets and our friend Jordan, who will speak later, has really brought it up numerous times. Something just didn't feel right. The technicals inside of the market, the volume, the volatility, something just felt like it was coming, but we didn't know what. And this one, I think, was a little bit of a meteor, came out of the sky, and unfortunately hit a few people in the head. So,
yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah,
yeah. So again, we're gonna talk about that in some detail in a little bit. But I think if for our purposes, you know, we're constantly trying to get this message out to the clients about the risk reward equation and how much is an appropriate amount of risk for a reasonable rate of return. And boy, oh boy, when it goes off the rails, it can really go off the rails.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, it never takes much for the market to get jittery after the run-up that we had, right? So it's not a huge surprise that the market was looking for a reason to sell off. The reason that it sold off, I think, was what the surprise was, not the fact that we had the sell-off. But at the same token, and you and I talked about this earlier today, now that hopefully this story is behind us, the market will focus again on fundamentals, and the market will focus again on Exxon. And, you know, we get a lot of research from different places. And I was happy to see today a research report actually talked about the earnings coming out this week for Exxon, UPS, and Pfizer, right? So those are the things that normally clients should be focusing on, not, you know, this crazy headline story that we've been dealing with.
And look, the problem, as we've mentioned in the past, when you are talking about headline risk, it really kind of almost forces you, even if you're unwilling to do so, to take your eye off the ball, right? It kind of distracts you from the long-term plan. And, you know, we're top down. We're looking at the economy. We're looking at growth. We're looking at unemployment numbers, consumer confidence, consumer spending, real core, solid, leading economic indicators. But then you get the meteor that comes across the sky like it did last week. And it could be really pretty and go, oh, wow, that was really nice. Or like I said, unfortunately, I think some people kind of got crushed by it. And we have a short clip of an interview that I did on Fox News on Saturday. I think my words came true really quick, and frankly, much faster than I thought they would. But I don't know if the story's written completely yet, Mike. So this is really a message we want to make sure we get to our clients. We don't get involved in this kind of stuff. We don't do it. We advise against you doing it on your own. And here's classic, all the reasons why.
So, yeah. So, you know, obviously we're talking about GameStop and you did a very good job on laying out what happened, why it happened, who was affected by it. And our clients who listening to the show know that you are a steady contributor to both Fox News and Fox Business News. So Saturday, I guess you were on Fox News, the big dog. And why don't we just go through the clip now, and then we'll come back and we can discuss it after.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
The Dow fell 620 points yesterday, closing under 30,000 to end a wild week that saw small retail investors, spurred by social media, taking on the big hedge funds. Shares in GameStop soared after the hedge funds had shorted it. The stock closing at $325 Friday. That's up dramatically from its January 4th close at $17.25. Another embattled stock, a movie theater chain, AMC, closed at $13.26 Friday. That's way up from $2.00 on July 4th. Now, lawmakers are talking about holding hearings over concerns the market may be in a dangerous bubble. Let's bring in Dominic Tavella now. He's the president and CEO of Leventhal Global Advisors. Dominic, first of all, what does all of this mean? Just break it down for us.
All right, so let's start why this whole thing happened. So let's say, Arthel, I own a stock and I don't like it because I think that stock is going to go down. Well, simply, I'm just going to sell it, take my money and go put it someplace else. But if I want to profit from the price of that stock going down, let's say from $10 to $2, I can actually borrow shares. Let's say I come and I borrow them from you. I will go out and sell them in the market at $10. I will wait for the price to come down, buy them back at $2 and return those shares to you and profit the $8. So we have billionaire hedge funds out there that are playing this game with these stocks, thinking the price is going to go down, have sold billions of dollars worth of these shares, hoping the price would go down. They could buy them back and return those shares. The problem is small investors have figured out this game, and instead of the price of the stock going down, the stock has gone up, forcing these billionaire hedge funds to come back and buy them at higher prices, huge losses for the billionaire hedge funds, big profits for the small investors.
Thank you for breaking that down. And that's what I was going to ask you. How is that different from what happens inside hedge funds? And you just told us. But also, why should we care?
Well, the big issue here is that the price of this company in GameStop has gone through the roof. And so it's one thing when you're pushing this lever to try to push the stock up so you could profit from it. But now we have an incredible amount of unsophisticated small investors who are just focusing on the price of the stock going higher. So you have a lot of small investors buying it, not quite understanding the mechanics. And in the other side, you have very large institutional traders that have literally lost $1 billion, money that they may have to go and borrow to try to pay back. They might be forced to sell other stocks and bonds that they normally would not want to sell, depressing the prices of the stock market, which is what we've had happen this week. And ultimately, they could have to close the doors and maybe the institutions they partnered with also be in financial difficulty. So we are dealing with a very precarious situation right now. It'll unravel, but hopefully not too much damage.
But Dominic, the question is, listen, if I'm one of those little guys, why shouldn't I get in the same game that you just told me they do this in any way inside of hedge funds? So why shouldn't I, the so-called little guy, get in the game and game the system?
So this is exactly their argument. They've watched big players, the Clash of the Titans back when we saw this happen with Herbalife and other companies. And these major institutions, investors, made a lot of money or lost a lot of money. So from their perspective, it's, hey, you know what? I'm going to be one of these guys. And in a herd mentality, they're actually acting like a billion dollar hedge fund. The problem, of course, is they've bid up the price of these companies to an unrealistic price. And sooner or later, those companies are going to come back down to normal. If you end up buying the price of that stock at a high, you're going to suffer that loss. It really is a game of musical chairs. The music's going to stop playing.
Don't stop the music. Never. I love music. Anyway, back to the story. Why do or should lawmakers or the federal government care or get involved?
So, or little investors not understanding what they're doing, and should there be some guard there to protect them from themselves? Also, if you had a major financial institution fail in this case, would it bring down the system? Would it create damage to other financial institutions? So there should be some safeguards here, but certainly the little investors are going, we're just playing the same game that the big boys are playing and beating them at their own game.
So we will have to continue to watch this story, and we will. And Dominic Tavella, we'll have you back on to talk about it. Thank you very much.
Love you. Thank you, Arthel. Mm-hmm.
So holy cow, the music definitely stopped playing.
Yeah, I mean, look, Mike, we have a lot of history on these kind of things. One of the more recent ones was the company called Tilray, about a $20 stock. It went up 1,400%. In a similar set of circumstances, just ginormous profits to the people that bought it and ginormous losses for the people that bet against it. And yet the stock now is back to $18 last time I looked. So it's a full cycle. The question is when will the true valuation of the company based on fundamentals come into the picture? Honestly, didn't expect it to happen within 48 hours of trading here, Mike. The stock got crushed yesterday and got crushed again today. I don't know if this story is completely written, but if you played in that game, you still could potentially be smiling. But if you bought it at the top, my God, you have sustained some unbelievable losses.
Well, to your point, even when people forget, when a stock is going down, right? So people are selling, there's a buyer on every transaction, right? So yeah, there's a bunch of people that are heading for the exits, but there's also people buying, right? At the same time, you can't have a seller without a buyer, obviously. So just putting this whole GameStop story in context, on January 12th, the stock was trading for $19.84. On Thursday, it hit its peak of $468.
Same company, right?
Same company in less than 3 weeks. The next day, it was down $104, right? So people are probably jumping in there and saying, geez, what a great opportunity. I'm going to get a bargain and buy it at $354. A $20 stock that was three weeks ago, they're getting a bargain at $354. Yesterday, it closed at $227. Today it closed at $90. But here's the thing that's really interesting. When it hit its peak frenzy, the stock traded over 200 million shares. And don't forget, these are small investors. And it traded over 200 million shares. So yesterday and today, when the stock went down, the volume was greatly reduced. So,
as you know, Mike, many of the broker-dealers out there simply wouldn't even allow people to trade this stock because of the danger that was out there.
Correct. So the fact that the volume is now way down basically tells you that, you know, this is a country with a short attention span and people are ready to move on from this, right? They're ready to move on to the next thing. But as us in the business have said for a while, as this was going on for the last couple of weeks, this is not going to end well. And you said it on TV on Saturday. And, you know, again, spot on, kudos to you. It will not end well.
And let me bring up one other point. So, you know, we talk about these billion-dollar losses that some of these very large hedge funds have taken in order to you know, meet their obligations, right? You have a loss, you got to pay for it. But what I think a lot of people didn't realize is the volatility we saw in the markets last week, a combination of these institutions had to sell shares of stock in order to meet their margin calls. So it's not that they wanted to sell them. They probably had still a lot of confidence in the names that we talk about all the time, but they're forced to liquidate positions in order to meet their margin calls. And as we found out, a lot of them were able to go out there and get additional investment capital from investors, and they solve some of their problems that way. But it put an immense amount of pressure on the markets themselves, including some investors who weren't involved, going, "Oh my God, maybe these markets might go through a significant, you know, correction." So even though it technically does, we're not really in that game. It's not something we do. It affected all of us.
Absolutely affected all of us. The other thing that you can't lose sight of, when our business is the lead story on the news and the lead story for the late night comics, it's never a good sign. And I really think, you know, the media painted these Reddit guys as the heroes in this, right? But what they also did is they sucked a lot of other people into this story who were just minding their own business and weren't part of Wall Street Bets and wasn't part of this forum. And all of a sudden, they want a piece of the action. So I really believe that the media did the investing public a disservice, which with this get rich idea, you know, get rich overnight, which again, we know as investment professionals just never, ever, ever ends well.
And look, Mike, I did the story for Fox News on Saturday, but my God, it was the headline story all weekend on all the Sunday morning news programs. And so it took over. It had a life of its own, as you've described, and it took on a life of its own. You know, our job is always to be very consistent with the message we're giving to our clients and stay steady, stay controlled, don't lose sight of the long-term goal, and we'll get you there, right? We'll get you there.
Right. And it's not a conspiracy when the investment companies, are curbing the trading and curbing the option trading and curbing the shorts. This is not, it's not corporate America or Wall Street trying to screw the little guy. I really believe, and this may be naive on my part, it's really Wall Street trying to protect the little guy and save the little guy from themselves.
And without making bring up another complex issue, but let's be honest, Robinhood itself, one of the major players in this game, found itself in financial difficulty and had to go to its own investors to build up its reserve capital. So I don't know if they were doing it out of some conspiracy theory as much as maybe perhaps their own survival in this industry. So look, it's not for the faint of heart. It's not a game that everybody wants to play. Certainly a game we will not play. But I'd rather close with one simple thought. If you actually were in this game and you got the winning lotto ticket, take the money and run. And often these investors will say, no, it's going to go even ever higher. It's going to quadruple. And eventually they just go for the complete round trip and give up the profits that maybe they had in the bank.
Absolutely. And on that note, we will take a break. We will be back with Jordan Kimmel, and he has a special guest tonight. The legendary investor Louis Navalier is going to join us. He may be exhausted talking and thinking about GameStop, so hopefully he'll bring some other views to us. But we'll be right back after
this break. Mike, some wisdom for sure.
We'll be right back.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Today, enterprise technology is both strategic and global. Each week on CTN CIO Talk Network, IT thought leaders from around the world share their experience with listeners as they discuss with Sunjog All how they are trimming costs and partnering with business to innovate and help IT become more competitive, better care for customers, and improve the corporate bottom line. If you want to keep up with IT thought leadership, listen to CTN CIO Talk Network with Sunjog All at CIOTalkNetwork.com.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
Partner Up with Amy Carroll focuses on getting more of what you want and need more easily with less difficulty. While this applies to business, it can be used for just about everything, from relationships to leadership. You'll hear stories and tips to uplevel your communication and mindset, to gain confidence and inspire action by making your partner look good, conflicts dissolve, and results improve. Partner Up with Amy Carroll is heard every Friday at 7 a.m. US Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Central European Time on Voice America Business.
You are listening to the Labenthal Report. If you're listening to the show live, join in on our discussion with questions or comments at 1-866-472-5790. Again, that's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to contact@labenthal.com. Now, back to the Labenthal Report.
And welcome back to the Labenthal Report. I'm Jordan Kimmel, the Chief Equity Strategist and Portfolio Manager here at Labenthal. And it's an absolute delight to bring on someone who's become a friend, someone who I used to sit in the front row and watch for many years. Louis, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Jordan.
So let me just set the stage a little bit, folks. You know, about 30 years ago when I was trying to really cobbled together the magnet stock selection process, bring the best tenets of value, growth, and momentum around. There was a guy named Louis Navalier with the number one 10-year track record for newsletters. They introduced you before we came on as the legendary Louis Navalier. You know, you used to see me in the front row all the time, at every time I could sit in front of you in an audience. So I learned so much from you, Louis. There'll be a lot to dive into about the models and what you're seeing. So really, thanks so much for joining us here.
Oh, it's an honor.
So let me just, before we get deeper into the model and I watched a video of you today. I think all our listeners should learn how to find more information. But before we get into that, I know that there's this big argument that's overhanging the market long term, passive versus active. And, you know, for years and years now, all we've heard is nobody can beat the market. Why should you bother trying? And I bother trying because of what I learned over the years. But let me get your take on what's happened in the last 10 years and what you think about it.
Well, sure. I'm originally from Berkeley, California, so I'm trained in passive investing. In fact, I was building index funds before they got big. And I remember my first project was to mirror the S&P. The reason indexing evolved, they had passed a law called ERISA in the early 70s. And the way the lawyers interpreted it, if we could just match this benchmark, we can have no liability. So everybody wanted to track this index to kind of cover their butt. Anyway, so I built one of the first tracking portfolios. I had 332 stocks, figured out all the correlation. And, you know, anyway, I was a failure because my tracking portfolio accidentally beat the market. And I subsequently learned I was lied to, okay, that a lot of people that promote indexing just promote it for social reasons. And that being from Berkeley, I was taught that it's un-American if we try to out-earn our neighbor, okay, because we'll create social unrest. And I just thought it was a load of crap. So I just started publishing my research to document you could beat the market. And, you know, we have the stock grader database out there. It's in the public domain. It's we grade stocks on A, B, C, D, and F basis. On our manager company website, we show the performance. You know, we don't have a problem being in the market. So we want to empower people. So we give actually our research away free in the public domain. We also have a dividend grader. And then we also have paid newsletters and a manager company. Our manager company is just a family office now. Our firm is at capacity as a manager. We can, so when we go to buy a stock, it's, you know, we only buy slivers of it because the amount of money we manage. But this is a good year. It's a lot of people think it's like 1999. I think it's better, to be honest with you. There's just no liquidity out there, so any volume just sends stocks soaring. And it's a wild year already. I mean, the average Chinese ADR, and I've got like 30 of them, are up over 40% on average. I mean, it's actually nuts this year. And I think what Reddit exposed just exposed how fragile the markets are. And but, you know, things are going up on order imbalances, so it's going to be a good year.
Right. Well, again, you know, it's available to other people. I know you put your market grader out. I think one of the secrets is, it really takes a tremendous amount of work to maintain an active portfolio. So people like to see what you're in and what you have. But in order to keep it current, you know, what I've learned is there's a tremendous amount of work. And you actually coined something, I remember years ago, buying pressure on certain companies. So people will clearly gravitate to ETFs or index funds. And for a lot of people, I think that's a very good solution. But if you're looking to beat the market, you have this factor model that I think before most other people. Do you want to kind of share just a couple of tidbits about which of the companies that actually get the buying pressure?
Sure. Well, we calculate alphas, and we think we can do a better alpha than most people. I mean, I'll just tell you, we regress the stocks against multiple benchmarks, but we always match it up with the benchmark with the highest correlation, highest R squared. A lot of people do their alphas and betas wrong. We think we do them right, and we do them on a trailing 52-week basis. So every week, we're adding a week, cutting off a week. And alpha divided by standard deviation is my top secret quantitative ratio. And what it does is it's finding a stock that kind of zigs when the market zags. So just for argument's sake, let's say the market's up 50% and some stock goes up 100%, but it moves in tandem with the market. It'll get a beta of 2 and an alpha of 0, and I won't pay attention to it. So I'm only looking for things that zig when the market zags. And then what happens is I divide it by standard deviation or volatility, because usually the more persistent the buying pressure, the safer the stock. Eventually that buying pressure will ebb and the stock will get more volatile and I'll start to trim it. Now, before I even jumped in feet first, I want to find out what's the fundamental anomaly causing the alpha. And it could be non-fundamental. It could be short covering. It could be rumors on the internet. It could be M&A activity. So I like to sink my teeth into what's working fundamentally. And on our stock grader, we have 8 tried true fundamental indicators like sales growth, margin expansion, earnings stability, earnings momentum, cash flow, return on equity, analyst revisions, earnings surprises, et cetera. And the bottom line is what works will work a little differently per asset class. So like in large cap, it's more margin expansion, sales growth, surprises, stability. You get down to small cap, it's more momentum. Surprises always work. Positive analyst revisions work big time. So we try to, what my analysts do is we try to dial in what's working in that neighborhood. So it's kind of like being a football coach, and your game plan is going to change who you play and what's going on. And we have to keep tweaking our models, and we tweak them at the end of each quarterly earnings season because we test what works on a 1-3 year basis. So we test what works 3 year, but wait 1 year. And so basically, you know, we're very proud of the models, and when fundamentals are on, we're on. And that's exactly what's happening now. This market, as it goes higher, will get more narrow, more fundamentally focused. And then it's going to consolidate after earnings season. But right now, the consolidation's pretty mild.
So let me jump in here because I want to ask you kind of a big question. But, you know, frankly, you know, I wanted to be the best stock picker. And I remember used to calling your office and showing you ideas. And you'd say, Jordan, it depends on how it fits within a portfolio, not just an individual idea. And I really learned that from you and understand that. But let me back up where people will say, forget about picking the best stocks. I'm just scared to death of the whole market. And here's why. And here's why I won't invest. And, you know, you actually had some early years at the Fed. And you do more than just manage stocks. But I know you have some bond product. But the point I'm getting at is the fear is we have too much debt. And there's just too much debt, too much debt. You hear that all the time, and you heard that 100 years ago. But what's different now, Louis, dangerous words, I want to ask your opinion. The Fed owns a lot of these things, and the Fed's, you know, paying their, you know, the left pocket with their right pocket. So I think sometimes the fear of too much debt is overstated. I think the government's making a ton of money on mortgage bonds, government bonds. These bonds all pay interest. So is there too much government debt, or is that just something to keep people distracted?
Well, the high level of debt is going to ensure that we're going to have 0% interest rates for the rest of my lifetime. you know, Yellen's going to work very, very good with Powell because, you know, they know each other very well. And she was, of course, former Fed chairman. And so she wants to make sure that every time she issues more Treasury securities, the Fed's doing plenty of quantitative easing. Now, although the Fed's pledged to keep short-term rates low through 2023, they are letting the yield curve tilt up a bit, and that's to help bank profits and things. But, yeah, no, it's rigged. And, you know, we're over 100% of GDP on our cumulative budget deficit. And then this fiscal year, we're supposed to push 10.6% of GDP. So, yeah, we're digging ourselves a hole. I'm not sure we're going to go to negative rates, but, you know, if you keep your rates this low too long, negative rates will eventually creep in. That's what's happened to Europe and Japan. And of course, Britain fought negative rates in Europe, and they finally gave in. Normally, we'd have a stronger dollar because we have higher rates, but, you know, just the way the U.S. was viewed internationally and the political banner and then the weakness in our economy really has allowed China to have a much stronger currency. And I think what's most fascinating is the multinationals are leaving more money in China lately. They're getting their the yuan's appreciation. They're getting higher yields. You know, the perception used to be, I don't want to leave my money in China because they could devalue. Well, as China becomes a reserve of foreign currencies, you know, it weakens the dollar. But hey, a weak dollar is good. Creates windfall profits for multinationals. Will eventually cause inflation because commodities are priced in dollars. So it's compound complex, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, they're never raising rates.
Right. And so I think it comes down to something I heard you say today on your call, and you can share how people could listen to it, but it was the Louis of old, the best defense is having the best offense. You know, I believe that offense, defense, and special teams, you know, the value growth and momentum. But the point is high interest rates or high amount of corporate government debt is not keeping you, I don't think, from having your offense on the field right now. Mm-hmm. And I think you're really encouraging people to enjoy the ride and keep their heads.
Well, sure. I mean, basically, in this low rate environment, you either do residential real estate that's financed, that's hot, or you do stocks. And with these low rates, you can have higher multiples. You know, you can see Wall Street's almost ignoring multiples. I think that's dangerous. But, you know, I checked my small caps this weekend. I'm still trading at 20 times this year's forecasted earnings, so that's not too bad. So even though I don't like to pay the world's highest multiple, you can see Wall Street's doing that right now. And I think that is dangerous, and there are bubbles out there to be pricked.
Right, no doubt. So you know that you're a big fan at the firm, and Michael Hartzman has a mentor that follows you carefully, loves your newsletters. I'm going to ask Mike and Dom, you know, they both want to have some questions for you, Louis. So the thing is, before they come on and ask what they want, I want to ask you, is there anything you're seeing or feeling that people aren't talking about? You want to just use a chance to kind of look around the corner and tell people what risk they may?
Sure.
So
let me be clear. Markets are seasonally strong to November and April. There's year-end pension fund. There's pension fund in the new year. I think in recent years, the seasonal strength is really October through May. And we're in the midst of that now, so enjoy it. Beyond May, we'll enter the bumpy summer months. The Biden's honeymoon with the media might get a little bit more tense. And then a lot of pension funding ebbs. People get distracted by their summer travels. If we can travel next summer, we'll see. And then the markets will start to oscillate a bit. But the we're going to have easy year-over-year comparisons all this year. You can have a 10% correction at any time. You know, we'll see what triggers it. But right now, I think it's lock and load time. We'll just have some consolidation after this earnings season later this month. The main thing I would say is as they decimalized Wall Street, they broke it. There is no liquidity out there anymore. There's no inventory. And order flow is everything. And what I found is I've been very fortunate because my publisher sells 10,000 new newsletter subscriptions a week. And everything we recommend has just got buying pressure under it. And, you know, I've never been in a year like this where the buying pressure is just so relentless under our stock. So I don't know. That's why I had to essentially close my management company because, you know, I can only take so much money, but it's the melt up is unbelievable. I think Reddit exposed how fragile the markets are and how ill-prepared they are for big order flows. And well, Tesla did it to a certain degree. I know that was a big short squeeze. But I just think as long as there's buying pressure, we'll be fine. And, you know, the fourth quarter, there was no volume. We went up. Now we're having volume this quarter. So I just think the fundamentals of the market are very, very sound. And I feel pretty good about it. And, you know, I'll get nervous in the summer months and whine a bit, but I do that every summer.
Dom and Mike, take it away.
Hey, Louis, thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Michael Hartzman. Just a quick question. I heard you mention 1999, which, you know, made the hair on the back of my neck stand up because I remember 1999, we were led right into 2000 and the sell-off. I also heard you say that the market has some long-term fundamentals. So when you said, and I'm asking really for our listeners, because they're going to ask us if we feel that we're in a bubble. So although you refer to 1999, do you have any concerns that the market isn't a bubble, or do you think market has some longer term legs?
There's bubble stocks. I do these podcasts and I mentioned that, you know, because there's a big ESG craze underway, and I'm from Berkeley, and just, you know, Berkeley banned natural gas. So if you barbecue, they think you're evil now. But so ESG is different wherever you go around the country. But one of the stocks I mentioned that the ESG folks loved was QuantumScape. And I mentioned it before it went public. And, of course, when they went public the day after Thanksgiving, it went up 50%. And then it went up 400%. And I had to keep saying on my podcast, folks, there's no earnings here. It's just a lab with a nice battery. And I know it's backed by Bill Gates and Volkswagen, but, you know, they'll have their first factory in 2024. And if that works, they'll build a bigger factory in 2025. And maybe they'll make money in 2027. But what happened is when that SPAC went public, they only floated 5% of the stock. And I had to write up this big thing like, okay, all the stock's going to come unrestricted and it's going to collapse on its own weight. So I think the people that that took QuantumScape public were a little bit too cute. And we saw it with Nikola, you know, the hype behind that, and that got overhyped. So I realize everybody's trying to out Elon Mr. Musk and be Elon 2 or something, but I think the problem is a lot of this ESG money just chases things blindly, and I think they would be better served if they wait for earnings. And you know, I have, you know, ESG stocks like Enphase Energy and Solar Edge, but I wait till they have earnings. So that's my main warning.
Sound advice. Yeah.
What's that?
That's sound advice. Wait till they have earnings.
Yeah. The only one I took an exception on was NIO, because NIO was getting better press than Tesla lately. Supposed to be first to market with solid state, but the Chinese government also backed them. So I just felt it was worth the risk. They have operating margins. They have operating earnings, but they don't have overall earnings. So, and you know, I'll be candid with you, I missed Tesla. It showed up my system as an A. But every time I did the fundamentals, I said, there's no earnings here. And it's still that case to this day.
Incredible.
They're from tax credits. They're not from making cars. Mm-hmm. So
To your point, we got between $4 and $5 trillion sitting in money market accounts out there.
Yeah.
And basically zero interest rate. They're earning zero on that money.
Yeah.
So that money's got to go somewhere, right? And it's got to chase something.
But it needs, as soon as confidence comes back, you know, sometimes people have cash because of what happened to the economy, almost a year ago when COVID hit, I think the savings rate hit 33%. So, you know, like if I'm a poor restaurant owner, yeah, I'm going to have cash because I'm trying to survive. But, you know, I think it will come back when confidence comes back. And so, you know, right now we don't have that signal right now. And so hopefully that will happen, you know.
This is the way the markets look with no confidence, Louis. What happens when the economy is open, there is a vaccine, and there is confidence? I mean, that's...
Well, there's a lot of capitalists in the Biden administration. There's a lot of globalists, too. So I think your first winner was China, and I think your second winner are the multinationals. But they're going to be outsourcing like crazy, and corporate America is going to be outsourcing manufacturing service like crazy. And hopefully we can be competitive, but they do have to cheer people up. And, you know, they haven't gotten around to doing that at this moment. But hopefully they will. I mean, Joe seems like a nice guy, and hopefully, you know, he can sit there with his dog and try to connect with Americans. But hopefully they'll do that's what we need. And we just, you know, we had a cheerleader for America for 4 years, and you know, he's not cheerleading right now, so.
Louis, you have any inflation concerns at all?
What's that?
Any inflationary concerns at all?
Inflation's growing because the dollar's weak. It's all in commodities. We have a huge manufacturing recovery underway. You know, I have friends in the auto industry, and their orders are up 21%. They're all parts suppliers. You know, they make all the speaker grills and all these fancy composites. But, you know, the auto production has actually been held back by the chip shortage. You know, they're making all the cars like Tesla's now with all these big screens. And the companies that make the chips for the OLED and LED screens, there's a chip shortage. So that's why we like TSM, Taiwan Semi, United Microelectronics, other Taiwanese company. So, yeah, the manufacturing boom will continue. You know, it's held back by the chip shortage. Obviously, we're having a boom because of housing. You know, I just ordered new garage doors in Florida. It's, you know, 3 months, you know, to get my garage doors made. And I upgraded my generator here in Florida. That was 5 months, you know. So, you know, the good news, they got the just-in-time delivery going on. But it's you got to wait. So I just think we have to get the service part of our economy fixed. You know, a lot of people are really freaked out.
So, Louis, you know, one thing just on the market side, sometimes the way the market is running on companies, and I'm not talking about last week, it almost seems like it's algo trading rather than a decision being made by a portfolio manager. And maybe like what you said, it's a matter of the order flow and filling the orders at certain times of days. But sometimes it seems more like algos than people at hand.
Well, I know a little bit too much about that because I have my own ETF with Oppenheimer. actually a company that Oppenheimer bought. But yeah, if you look at ETF spreads, they're tight in the morning. They're tight at the close. In the middle of the day, you can drive a truck through them. And so the spreads are alive. But yeah, from 2:30 on to 4 o'clock, you know, everybody's rushing to fill their orders by the end of the day. You know, we just had a nice rally Monday and Tuesday. Those are seasonally strong days. Thursdays, Fridays are weaker because people want to clean up their inventory for the weekends and all, you know. I actually show that when I do a seminar. I show here's the daily performance. I actually borrow all the stuff from Bespoke. Bespoke's been great at documenting spreads, when to buy, all these intraday, interweek anomalies. Bespoke's a great, great service. They're on Long Island. And, you know, one of the things I like that they've shown is that if you bought an ETF at the opening and sold at the close, doesn't matter if it's SPY, QQQ, or the Russell 2000, since inception of those ETFs, you lose money. On the other hand, if you bought them at the close and sold them at the opening, you'd be up several hundred percent, okay? So
another, you know, strategy, something. So this sounds like a new strategy. Well, Louis, you know, we're going to run out of time soon, so I just really want to say for the record, you know, what you taught me is fundamentally sound companies, looking not only at PE, but really going through the balance sheet, you know, understanding what drives the company. Too many people, I think, are just looking at charts and not looking at the fundamentals. I know if it's in your portfolio, it should have fundamentals to begin with. I mean, I learned a lot from you, and we're wrapping up. Is there anything you want to go out with the close on here?
Well, no, I think fundamentals do matter, and we have a lot of new investors in the market that don't know what those things are. So they'll probably learn the hard way, okay? But yeah, fundamentals do matter. And if you want to cut your volatility, first step is to have fundamentals. And then you don't have to worry because you just count on the fundamentals to catch the stocks. And so that's why our best defense is strong offense.
Right. Well, it's not a poker game to me. It's a very serious business, and it's fundamentals first. It's probably safety first. And Louis, thanks so much for joining us. It's great having you. Great to see you. Enjoy the warm weather. Continued success. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the Labenthal Report right after this quick break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Tune in to the Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, with co-hosts Ron Baker and Ed Kless. Ron and Ed will show you how to recognize that wealth is created by intellectual capital. It's all in the possibilities that we can create and that are created for us. These possibilities are destined to be discovered by human imagination and through the service of others, creating a brighter future for all of us. The Soul of Enterprise is heard live every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel, and simulcast at the same time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
If you've been trying to figure out how to reach your financial goals, there's a show that will show you how to do just that and much more. It's called All About Goals, and the host is Tom White. Every show has a specific financial goal, like buying a car, a home, having kids, getting them educated, and retirement. Our guests include the influencers and pioneers who are dedicated to helping people like you reach those goals. Tune in live every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Business.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to the Labenthal Report. If you're listening to the show live, join in on our discussion with questions or comments at 1-866-472-5790. Again, that's 1-866-472-5790.
472-5790. You may also send an email to contact@Laventhal.com. Now, back to the Laventhal Report.
All right. Well, I'm Michael Hartzman. And Dom, the first two segments that we did tonight really can't be more opposite. And what was interesting to me is the first segment when we talked about GameStop, one of the articles I read in preparation of the show tonight was from a behavioral finance expert. And he literally said that the reason GameStop ran up is because people were suffering from FOMO, F-O-M-O, which obviously you know means the fear of missing out. So here is one group of people who are literally making decisions on emotion, right? They want to be part of the crowd. They want to be part of the fun. And then you have this legendary investor, Louis Navalier, who's has been phenomenally successful for decades. And guess what? He doesn't talk about FOMO. He doesn't talk about catching a wave. He doesn't talk about being part of the momentum. He talks about fundamentals. He talks about investing with companies that make money, that have earnings. What an interesting concept.
What a concept. I think I had sent you an interview that our friend Bob Dahl from Nuveen, we've both known him, what, 20, 30 years, right?
At least, at Oppenheimer.
Brilliant man, very terrific money manager. And he talked about the liquidity in the market and free trading on the Robin Hoods of the world and playing people playing on their phones. And almost shockingly that we hadn't seen an event like we saw last week earlier, right? People think this is betting on a sports site or something. And so we listened to a gentleman like Louis who's been in the industry forever and has an impeccable reputation, and fundamentals matter. My God, what a concept. You know, company having earnings and real profits and taking market share and, you know, all that kind of boring stuff that actually does matter in the long run. So this time is not different. Right.
This time is not different.
It's not different, right? And for a short period of time, the whether it's some of these speculative stocks or the cryptocurrencies or whatever fad du jour might come up, and you know they go through their Roman candle, skyrocketing up and then skyrocketing right back down to earth. But we have a much bigger responsibility to our clients, and so. We will avoid, if we can, but we will avoid those types of events.
Yeah. Yeah. To your point about Bob Dahl, I did listen to it. And I love Bob. I love listening to him. He said, when you take three factors, free money, meaning the stimulus checks, time on your hands, and free commission trading, this is what you wind up with. You know, this is the recipe for disaster. And he really was able to break it down and make it that simple. And really just the way Louis did, you know, invest in companies that have strong fundamentals and are heading in the right direction. And more often than not, you know, you're not going to wind up, if you have patience, on the wrong end of what we saw over the last 2 days.
And look, you know, I do want to end on a positive here. I mean, I think the next 3, 6, 12 months should be positive for us finally getting out of this virus situation that we're in. The fact that as the economy, people get inoculated and can go out into the real world, they can spend money. The consumer representing 60-70% of the economy should be very strong economic growth the latter part of this year. And companies that have been closed in now for over 12 months can finally open the doors and actually start earning money to bring down to the bottom line. So I think the overall picture is as positive as Louis described it, but some volatility in between, right? Some bumps and bruises in between.
Yeah, they'll definitely be bumps and bruises in between. They always are. But it also boils down to what Louis said and what we say every week and our guests say every week. Interest rates are low and they're staying low for an extended period of time. And really, that's what it always boils down to. Follow the Fed.
And follow the money. And right now, lots of liquidity, as we've mentioned, and it's going to go somewhere. And I think as these companies show better and better earnings, we've had the majority of companies reporting this quarter better than expected earnings by an average of over 17%. Really good numbers. I think that trend continues the balance of the year.
Well, that's a high note to end the show on. So the hour went quick as always, and I'll see you next week.
Michael, thank you, and have a great evening. Everybody be safe out there.
Stay safe, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to the Labenthal Report. Dominic, Michael, and Jordan will be back for our next program, airing next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time and 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a great week.